Yitzweiss, CPA, shake things up a bit this tax season. We should all acknowledge we're in a few weeks of April 15th. I asked Yitz if he has additional customers from the shir. And he told me that he thinks he gets additional customers bischus the shir. So everyone should consider that. He already gave me tax advice at the Kiddush, which he wasn't supposed to, and he, for free, that it's going to help me. Not that I've ever done my taxes. And then the Bagel Munch is...
sponsoring the breakfast.
Sponsoring the breakfast. Okay. So, okay. So here we go. So we just have to revisit for one moment, Hey Amud Beis, where the Gemara quoted a statement in the name of Rav. The Gemara said, El El Rabbi Yehuda, Hilchas Gemiri Lo De'am Rav Chia Barashi Amar Rav. So we're discussing the source of various... halachos coming from a halacha l'moshe mi-Sinai. So it says in the name of Rav, shiurin, chatzitzin, u'mechitzin. Anything related to shiurim with regards to amounts and measurements in halacha, chatzitzin, which we'll see, has to do with halachos in tahara, and mechitzin, which is our issue, which is what are the laws of mechitzos, what constitutes a halachically real wool. All of these things are halachos l'moshe mi-Sinai. We're about five lines. I know we got up to the top of Bava Medalef, but it's in the middle of a discussion, so we'll just pick it up in the very end of Hey Amud Beis. So all these things are halachos l'moshe mi-Sinai, and the Gemara is working through this statement because it's kind of shocking to suggest it's halachos l'moshe mi-Sinai. What is halachos l'moshe mi-Sinai? Did we discuss that last week? Halachos l'moshe mi-Sinai is a big discussion, but clearly what it's not is a halacha that is explicitly stated in the Torah. There are different types of halachos l'moshe mi-Sinai. Some are presumed to be midoraisa, and they just don't have an explicit source in the Torah. Then you have things that are legislated by the Rabbanan. But if something is halacha l'moshe mi-Sinai, that means it's a real din. It's a din that's been extrapolated from the Torah, maybe, but it's part of the Mesorah of Kabbalah Satorah. But it's not explicit in the Torah. It's as a din d'oraisa in the Torah. So the Gemara is shocked to see this list because the Gemara says shiurin d'oraisa ninu. Shiurin are halacha l'moshe mi-Sinai. It's something like floating around in some Gemara somewhere. What are you talking about? It's explicit in the Torah. Dechsev eretz chita u'saora v'kefen v'te'ena v'rimon eretz zayis shemen v'dvash. So v'amar Rav Chanan kol ha'posuk hazeh l'shiurin emar. This entire pasuk is coming to tell us about shiurin. How is it coming to tell us about the shiurin? So chita, a kernel of wheat, lebeis amenuga, has to do with the tuma in a base amenuga in a something that's been afflicted with tzarast. It's not a nichnas lebeis amenuga. If you go into a house that has tzarast and you have, so you're going to become tummy for sure. What about all your stuff? You know, what about all your stuff? So the kela v'alkteifa v'sandala v'tabaosa v'yado. So if you're carrying your stuff on your shoulders and your hands, so hu v'hein t'mein miyad, you and these items become t'mein miyad. If you're carrying them, hu v'hein t'mein miyad. Hayalavush, but if you're wearing all of them, lavush kela v'sandala v'raglo v'tabaosa v'etzbaosa, your rings are on your fingers, hu t'mein miyad v'hein t'horim. You are Tamei right away, because it says, El Beis, El Abayis, Yitamei. Behein Tahorin, but they are Tahor, Ad She Yishoe B'Kedei Achilas Pras. Until that you've been present there. In other words, if you just go in and go out quickly, then you would, they would not be Tamei. But if you're there for a certain amount of time, which is Kedei Achilas Pras. Kedei Achilas Pras is the amount of time it takes to eat pras. So what is that? Pas chitin velo pas seorim. So it's relevant because the shear is only if the pas that you're eating has to be pas of wheat and not pas of seorim. Pas of seorim, pas of barley, would be slower, the Gemara assumes, to eat. And we know this shear of kedei achilas pras comes up all the time. It comes up certainly with regards to Yom Kippur, right? If someone has to eat shiurim on Yom Kippur, someone is sick, or someone is just, their health is compromised in some way. So we have to feed them, kedei achilas pras. So midoraisa, you're not even allowed to eat. You're not allowed to eat anything on Yom Kippur. But if you're in a pressing situation, then we give someone shiurim. So how much is kedei achilas pras? So it ranges. So the Chassam Sofer's shita is it's 9 minutes. And that's what we always tell people to start with on Yom Kippurim if they're in a situation that could lead to a life-threatening situation.
You know what? They can eat a period of nine minutes?
They can eat a shear every 9 minutes.
Oh.
Every 9 minutes. But that shear goes as low as there's 9, 7, 6, 5.5. That shear goes as low as every 3 minutes. So depending on what the situation is, the shita of the Marcheshas and depending on what the situation is, sometimes in order to keep someone hydrated, for example, it happens often, a woman is pregnant, and there's no health concern per se, but if she's, so a woman who's very pregnant or not so pregnant, right, in other words, she's early, mm-hmm. or she's almost giving birth, there's not much of an issue with fasting. But there is a zone in the middle where dehydration leads to early labor, and we don't want to get dehydrated because she can go into labor. She's not going to go into labor in the first month, but she can go into labor in the 6th month or the 7th month, but that's not so healthy for the baby. So we don't want her to do that. So we want to keep such a woman hydrated. So we have a whole series of things that we do. So step one is we make sure she's in air conditioning. Step two, we make sure she's not working too hard on Yom Kippur. And if that means the husband doesn't go to shul, then that's the priority before she drinks a drop of water. We pull the husband out of shul. And then if that's not going to work and she needs some hydration, the doctor says she's quick to dehydrate. And even in a cool, relaxed atmosphere and drinking a lot before, she needs some hydration. So we tell her to drink every kedei achilas pras. Every 9 minutes is the first goal. And if for some reason that's not enough, you know, also sometimes let's say they get a little dehydrated, right? That's not enough. So then we can back it up as low as every 3 minutes.
For her to actually drink, the drinking period. She just wait every 9 minutes, but the actual consumption.
No, it's within a 9 minute period. It's not really waiting 9 minutes. It's only because they drink the whole thing right away. Okay. Within a 9 minute period, she could drink this amount. She wants to take a sip every minute for the 9 minutes. She could do that too. Women report that this drives them out of their mind. That it is not a pleasant Yom Kippur,
yeah.
but it is something that's. it is something that that needs to be done, and when it needs to be done, that's what's done. Generally speaking, a woman drinking a shear every 9 minutes is usually far more drinking than they do not on Yom Kippur,
mm-hmm.
And that's when you try to get them to, you know, ignore, like how much did you drink the day you're asking me this, Shiloh? How much did you drink today? Oh, I had a cup of water in the morning and I had a cup of water in the afternoon. That's like an hour of Yom Kippur. That's like, it's complicated today because many of the doctors are overly cautious because it's very litigious society. And so they're very machmir on things that are not necessarily so dangerous. They just, why should they take any risks? And then someone's in a situation where it's not so posh. And there are halachas about how to handle a conflict between the doctor and the rabbis and Shulchan Aruch, you know, with regards to Yom Kippur. Okay. So says the Gemara. So not only that, v'lo pas shiurin. Pas chiti v'lo pas seorin. Mesav ve'ochel beliftan. It's also the amount of time it takes, and the shear includes eating it with other things. This is what we're up to. Seora ditznan. What does seora have to do with anything? Ditznan etzem kiseora mitame b'maga uvemasa ve'ena mitame be'ohel. So we know that a dead body, the presence of a dead body, creates tumah, right? So we're all familiar with the presence of a dead body creates tumah in two different ways. One way it creates tumah is if you touch the dead body or you carry the dead body, that's maga umasa. But it also creates tumah be'ohel, even if you don't touch it and you don't carry it, but it's simply in the same structure that you are. In the shul I grew up in Beverly Hills, the Rav was a Kohen, sort of. So the Rav was a Kohen. So they wanted to create a situation where you could do levayas in the shul. My father was the executive director, and what they did was they broke through the wall of the wall of the ballroom and created a wall size window, sliding door. You have to remember there's no winter in California, And they built adjacent to the building, but a little bit off of the building. It wasn't anchored to the building. It was a separate structure against the building, this giant platform that was covered in stucco. And the aron could be placed on the platform. And when the Rav would do a levaya, he would stand literally within feet of the aron. But he was in a separate building. He was in a separate structure. And this way he could give hespedim. And it was a natural levaya. He didn't have to give a hesped from, Nebuch, when Rabbi Kohn has to give a hesped and he has to do it from another room onto the TV. It's so hard for him. It's very hard for him. We've talked about it. So he could be right there with the whole tzibur. And the mace is also right there, but the mace is in a separate structure. So how much of a mace, so to speak, creates a tumah in that context? So there's a shear. So let's say you have a bone. Let's say it's not a full body. Let's say there's a bone of a person. So etzem kiseora, the amount of bone that's equal to the size of a seora. So says the Gemara, is mitame b'magu mamasa, but not mitame b'oel. You need more to be mitame b'oel. Gefen. What's gefen? Gefen k'dei revius yayin lenazir. The amount of that would displace a revius of yayin for a nazir. That's what the nazir would be chay for. A nazir is not allowed to drink wine, right? Te'ena kigro geretz lahotza b'shabbos. Te'ena, it's like a fig, like a dried fig. That's the amount that if a person carries on Shabbos, they're chayiv. Rimon tells us, that Tanan, we learned in the Mishnah, kol kli balabatim shiuron kirimonim. So we know that a kli, a vessel, is susceptible to tuma. It's only susceptible to tuma when it retains its identity as a vessel. What contributes to its identity as a vessel? Many things, among which are its functionality as a vessel. So its function as a vessel is compromised if the vessel is punctured. Then it can't function the same way. Now, it depends how big that puncture is, right? You have a hole. So if I'm storing liquids and there's a tiny hole, now the vessel's a waste. A cup that has a little hole is a waste. But if I'm using it to store coffee beans and there's a little hole, that's not a waste at all. Unless you're a sugar coffee bean person, needs to be vacuum, But that's not a hole at all. So when something's omed l'schora, when something's being sold, even the smallest hole renders it not a vessel. If it's omed l'schora, because if you walk into a store and you see they're selling dishes and cups, and there's a tiny little hole, and the salesman tries to tell you, nah, it's not a big deal, it's a little hole, right? You're never going to buy that thing. When people buy something, they buy it complete. But kelim shabal abatim, if I walk into your home, right, and I'm rummaging through your, looking at your stuff, which I don't usually do in your home, but many of you do in my home, right, out of some sort of interesting curiosity, that... right? So if you see a kli that has a little hole in it, so you're not going to think it's not a functional kli. You'll assume I have uses for such a kli that has a little hole in it. But if you see the kli has a hole that's big, that's large, at a certain point it loses its functionality. At a certain point, it's not considered a kli anymore. What is that point? That point is when the hole is as big as a rimon, as big as a pomegranate. Eretz Zayis Shemen V'Dvash, Eretz Shekol Shiurea Kezesim. So then, Zayis, where does Zayis play a role in Shurim? All Shurim, all Shurim Achila are considered Kezayis. That's what Rashi says. If you look at Rashi, Shurim Karimon, Rosh Shurim Kezesim. So the first of the Gemara says, Kol Shira, so could I do Chayika Hani Damrinan. All Shurim are Kezais, all Shurim are not Kezais. We just mentioned a bunch that are not Kezais. Ela Imash Rosh Shira Kezesim. Most Shurim are Kezais. So Rashi writes, Meis, Venevela, Isser Chalev, the Isser Chalev, the Isser Dam, the Isser to drink blood, which itself is discussed. Why is the Shira Kezais and not a Revius if Dam's a liquid? So I think it's the Briskarov, famous Briskarov, that because the Torah says, Vidam lo sochelu, since the Torah refers to dam as something that is eaten, even though it's a liquid, it has the shear of a solid. Vipigol, vinosar, vitame, vigid anosha, gid anosha, all these things are all considered kezeis. Divash, what is divash doing in the pasuk? Kikosebes hagasa, like a large date. Beyom Kippurim. We know that in Yom Kippur, Rashi says divash kominim mitika kriyim divash v'tamara minim mitikaim. That dates are a sweet thing. So kosebes liyom Kippurim the loxe beachila shalosum. So because Yom Kippur, the iser is not just to eat on Yom Kippur. The iser is to
drink,
not just to drink, but to the chiyav istav inoy that you're supposed to oppress yourself. So therefore, the shear is even a little less. Small. So alma doraisa. So right, kosebes agasa biyom Kippur. So alma doraisa nino. So says the Gemara. Now the Gemara delivers the punchline of this whole discussion. What do we see from here? We see from here that everything's doraisa. So what are you telling me? This alakul emoshi misinai. What are you telling me? V'tizbira. So the Gemara explains. Shiurin miksivi. Do you telling me the Torah actually explicates all the shiurim? No, it doesn't. It has this coded pasuk. That's, by the way, used to learn all sorts of other things also. So ela hilchasa ninu. It's a halacha l'moshe misinai. V'kra asmachta be'almahu. And the pasuk is simply an asmachta. The pasuk is an anchor. There's a lot of discussion exactly how the Mesorah of Torah Shebaal Peh works. There's a lot of discussion about that. And one of the modalities of how we relate to Torah Shebaal Peh is that there is an independent Mesorah of what was given to Moshe at Sinai. And Chazal, through the Midrash Halacha, Chazal attribute these independent halakos to various hints in the Torah. That doesn't mean they are actually in an exegetical process extrapolating them from the Torah. They're just sort of linking them to the Torah, as opposed to other exegetical tools where we actually extrapolate things from the Torah itself. Midrashei Halacha is not something that we often study, but it's still a big part of of Torah Shebaal Peh. So hilchas aninu v'kra asmachta be'alma. So sometimes it means it's even an iser derabanan. Sometimes it means it's only derabanan when the Gemara says this, that it's a din derabanan and the kra is an asmachta be'alma. Sometimes it means that it's a din doraisa and the kra is an asmachta be'alma. It depends what exactly you're relating to here. So then the Gemara says, well, what do you mean? So the Gemara was picking on Shi'urin. That was the first on the list. Then the Gemara had a second thing on the list. What's the second thing on the list? Chatzitzin, the Gemara says. Chatzitzin, doraisaninu. You tell me chatzitzin are just a halacha l'moshe misinai, that there's somewhat of a diminished status from a regular din doraisa? Tichsiv v'rochatz es bisaro b'mayim. There's a din called chatzitza. What's chatzitza? Chatzitza means that when a person immerses in a mikvah, and this is true about a man or a woman, it's just that men today don't really immerse in a mikvah for purposes of taharos. Men immerse in a mikvah mostly for either minhagim, There's a big discussion, those who, and I'm not endorsing this, but those who go on to Harabayas, or the areas of Harabayas, where someone who is a Tamei Mace may go, however, the areas of Harabayas, a Tamei Mace may go, but someone who has Tuma Shiyotze Migufo may not go, so that person has to be Tovel for Keri. To be Tovel for Keri, in order to go on Harabayas for such a purpose, you can't just show up at the mikvah on the express line, throw off your clothes and jump in the mikvah while you're hacking with the guy next to you about, what he did for Simonim on Rosh Hashanah. That's not going to fly. You have to, as a man, do chafifa. You have to make sure you have no chatzitzos at all. To cut your fingernails, you have to take off all your makeup, you have to do whatever, all the different things we're gonna discuss. Sit in the bath, brush your hair, you have to prepare for mikvah. But certainly mostly for women, bizman hazeh, because nida labayla is still a concern about of a doraisa, and that itself is how many of our situations are doraisa. But lo yeh davar chotez peino levein amayim. So because it says, v'rochatz es bisaro b'mayim, your basar has to be b'mayim. You can't have something that's chotzeitz between you and the mayim. In other words, without this limud, you would assume that it's simply a ritual process. You have to be immersed in water. To be immersed in water. Who says the water has to touch every aspect of your actual body? Maybe you just need the experience of immersing in water. So says the Gemara, no, it has to be shaloye dabra chotzeitz beino levein amayim. Ki ase hilchasa. So therefore, there's no halacha l'moshe misinai. This is a regular din d'oraisa. So it's in the Torah. So what are you talking about? Ki asoy ilchasa l'sa'aro. So he says, no, it is a halacha l'moshe misinai because it's a special halacha l'moshe misinai when it comes to hair. One would think that since hair, on one hand, it's attached to the body. On the other hand, it's not really attached to the body, right? You don't cut your skin. You don't cut your finger. You do cut your hair. You do the hair grows and it's somewhat it's attached to the body, but maybe hair does not require tevila, right? Maybe a person could just go under. One of the main reasons that we have a woman standing there for tevila is to make sure that when the woman goes down, that all of her hair went down into the mikvah. When you have a Beis Din for gerus, so the Beis Din, that's one of the main things the Beis Din does. Beis Din has to be made that the woman is and the man is tovel, and you have to make sure that all the hair goes underneath. So ki asay hilchasa l'sa'aro k'derabba barbarachana, d'amarabba barbarachana nima achas k'shura chotzetes. So if the hair has to be toveles, so then that means that let's say you have a knot in the hair. If you have a knot in the hair, so if it's one hair that's tied into a knot, then that prevents the water from coming into contact with the area of the hair that is knotted. And therefore that would be a chatzitza. Shalosh ein chotzotzos. But if you were to take like the whole, three strands of hair and turn them into a knot together, then it wouldn't, the assumption is it wouldn't close as tight, right? Like imagine braids or ponytails. I have three daughters, so I don't know, there were certain, my wife was out of town, and she was in Eretz Yisrael, and the kids came to me, we need ponies for school. So, I don't know how to do this, so I watched a YouTube video, this guy from Paris, who teaches you how to make ponytails, and I sat there, and I had a whole mahalach, and then when my wife came home, and she was doing the ponytails, I said to her, you're doing it wrong, you're not... You're just throwing on the thing. Like you have to brush from the back and you have to get it all in. You have to do it higher up. It's a much, it's not a pashta malacha. So, but you know that if you take all the hair together and you're so then it doesn't grab as tight. By the time they come home from school, the pony's loose, the pony's out, the pony's. So says the Gemara, what about two strands of hair? Shtayim eni yodea. Shtayim, I don't know. So that's a suffix. But that's why we're very makpid for women before they go to mikvah. We're very makpid that they brush out their hair. They brush out their hair. So saro nami d'oraisa ninu. So the Gemara says, well, what do you mean that that hair is only a issue of halacha l'moshe misinai? Hair is also explicit in the Torah. Dichsiv v'rochatz es bisaro b'mayim. You have to wash es bisaro, not berochatz bisaro b'mayim, berochatz es bisaro b'mayim. Es hatofel bisaro. Es comes to include something that is tofel to your actual body. Umayniu, and what is that? Saro, that refers to your hair. So, therefore, if hair is also part of the explicit din, so chatzitz is in the Torah explicitly. Hair is in the Torah explicitly. So what is he talking about, Rav? What is he talking about? That chatzitzin is a halacha l'moshe misinai. It's not a halacha l'moshe misinai. It's explicitly in the Torah. So says the Gemara, lecha de Rabbi Yitzchak, ki'asai hilchasa lecha de Rabbi Yitzchak. It's following the din of Rabbi Yitzchak. The Amar Rabbi Yitzchak, says Rabbi Yitzchak, devar Torah, this is the din d'oraisa. The din d'oraisa is what constitutes a chatzitza. What constitutes a barrier on, let's take a woman as an example. A woman needs to be toveles in order to go to the mikvah, so she could be muteres labayla. So we know that women wash themselves beforehand to make sure that there's no foreign substance on their body when they go to mikvah. But what's the din d'oraisa? So the din d'oraisa is the Dvar Torah, rubo v'makpid alav chotzeitz. The din d'oraisa is that the only thing that would prevent this woman from having a kosher tevila is if the chatzitza covers, number one, rove of her body, or rove, we'll see what that means, rove of her body, the majority of her body, over 51% of her body, and that it's something she is makpid on. Makpid means she doesn't want it there, right? She that's what gets a little confusing about makpid and low makpid. Makpid means she's makpid. I don't want this on my body. Makpid. A makpid for this. This is not something I would go out with. This is not something. So if it's rubo umakpid, then min haTorah, the tevila is possible. And to live with such a woman, to have relations with such a woman who went to the mikvah under those circumstances, will be a chi of karis. That's not, she's a nida. Or a zava. So says the Gemara, what about she'eno makpid alav? What if, so rubo umakpid alav, chotzeitz. V'she'eno makpid alav, if it covers rove of her body, but she's not makpid. I don't care if this is on me. She's not makpid. She's not eino makpid. So eino chotzeitz, then that's not considered a chatzitza. Why? Because if she's not makpid to remove it from her body, then it's bottled to her body. She doesn't care if it's on her body. She doesn't care if it's on her body. She doesn't care if it's on. She doesn't care if it's off. So therefore, she's not makpid to remove it. So it becomes part of her body. Nail polish. Woman puts on nail polish, right? So, if assuming the nail polish looks nice, right, it's not all broken up and peeling off, so she's not makpid to remove that. She wants that on her body. That's part of her body right now. That's part of her. It may be a foreign substance, but she shows up at a wedding with this on her body. She doesn't. If a woman gets flour on her arms when she's baking challah, she doesn't go to a wedding with the flour on her arms. She's makpid to take it off her body. But if she gets nail polish on her nails, she's eino makpid. She doesn't have makpid to take it when she goes to a wedding. So therefore, eino, if she's eino makpid, even if it covers rove of her body, so eino chotzetz. That's minat Torah. That's minat Torah. V'gazru, and there was a gzeira, al rubo she'eino makpid, on the rubo she'eino makpid, right? So we'll get this. On if it covers rove of her body, there's a big machokas Rashi Tosis here, if this refers back to the hair or the whole body in the Shita Sami'iri, if it refers to each individual limb of the body, but bashness of the Gemara, v'gazra rubo she'eno makpid. So what if it covers robe of her body and she's not makpid? Mishum rubo umakpid. So we're gozer on rubo she'eno makpid, alts rubo she'makpid. So that's a gzeru. Then the Gemara says, v'al miut ha'makpid, and let's say, and these are the most common chatzitza shailas, she has something, it's very uncommon for a woman to have a foreign substance on most of her body, right? Except, God forbid, a medical situation. So let's say she has a miut, it's very small, right? But she's makpid, she's makpid, right? She wouldn't go out with this. Like her, let's take a nail polish example. Her nail polish is starting to crack off a little bit, right? So she wouldn't necessarily go to a nice place. She doesn't want that on her body. And so on that, on miyut ha-makpid, we're gozer mishum rubo ha-makpid. Because of rubo ha-makpid. Because since she could come to end up doing something of rove that is makpid, we're gozer even on miyut ha-makpid. Okay. Yeah.
Where did the aspect of hakpada come into play? When you look at brachat and basarov ha-mayim, I understand rove and miyut. But why would one's kavanah matter when it comes to...
Because the question of chatzitza is a question of whether or not it's bottled to a person's body or it's independent of a person's body.
Right.
And how you relate to the things you put on your body has a lot to do with whether or not you are basically evolving your body or you have put something foreign on your body. Example. If you were to put a filling in your tooth, mm-hmm. right? The water of mikvah does not have to enter the mouth. But there still can't be a chatzitza in the mouth. The Gemara says it has to be roi, kol sheroi lebila, bila ma'akeves bo, right? So the Gemara says that even the areas of the body that the water does not have to penetrate to, still have to be roy for water to penetrate to.
Right.
So you have a filling in your mouth. So would you say now, when I walk around, I have many fillings, right? And crowns, Baruch Hashem, Kesser Shem Tov, right? So do I walk around saying to myself all day, oh, I have this plastic in my body? No, this is my body. Right. This is part of my body, you know? So when something becomes part of your body, so that's called Bisaro. That's called Bisaro. So the question is, how does something become part of the body? So one way it becomes part of the body is, even if it has nothing to do with your mindset, if it covers the majority of the body, then that's already... Sure. In fact, there's a big machlokes in the Rambam and the Gaonim, if it covers the entire body and your eino makpid, it still may be considered a chatzitza d'oraisa. Mm-hmm. Because then, the Brisker Rav says, it's as if you didn't go in the water at all. But, back to your question, so that's where mindset matters. The Shulchan Aruch basically discusses whose mindset matters. So Shulchan Aruch says that, like l'chumra, we basically, if most women would not go out like this, even if you would, we still call this makpid. If most women would go out like this, but you wouldn't, because you're a mefunik about this, then that's still called makpid. It's only if most women wouldn't, and you wouldn't, now we're in the range of eino makpid. Mm-hmm. I have a number of situations that I deal with where women have a mental health issue related to mikvah, having to do with OCD. Those situations we treat very, very differently with chatzitza, because you have to deal with the medical situation in front of you. So the Gemara says, "V'ligzor nami al miut she'eno makpid." You know, like for example, there are interesting halachas. Like for example, like let's say a woman's it would be in Hilchas Tevila if a woman was toveles with nail polish that was like broken up. We're not talking about the tiny, tiny little pieces that are almost indiscernible. But let's say she missed a finger and the nail polish was all broken up. That would be a bigger shayla than if the nail polish was full. Like if she called us and said, I can't get it off. I can't get it off. I've tried a million times with nail polish remover. We would rather her polish the rest of the nail and go into the mikvah than go into the mikvah with this little piece of a polish that's left. Because a full nail polish is eino makpid. It's a miyuch eino makpid. Whereas, which is you know, really ikra din muteres. The Rambam writes in Hilchas Nida that we're machmir, that we get all chatzitzos off the women. So they have to take everything off. Even a miyat she'eno makpid, right? Even a miyat she'eno makpid. And that's why we're fairly machmir with chatzitzos. But bidieved, very often when women come with shailas bidieved, they get all nervous. You know, I came back from mikvah and I realized there was a little piece of nail, there was a little piece of this, there was a little piece of that. You know, most situations, as long as it's a miyat she'eno, as long as we can establish it's a miyat she'eno makpid, we could deal with it. And even a miyat makpid b'diavad, it depends on what the situation is. So the Gemara says the ligs are nami al miyat she'eno makpid. So why don't we make a gzera on miyat she'eno makpid and make that also a iser mitam gzera? So the Gemara says mishum miuto hamakpid, mishum miuto hamakpid. Or inami mishim rubel she'eno makpid. In other words, let's be gozer on even if it's tiny and she doesn't care, outs when it's rove and she doesn't care, or outs when it's she does care but it's tiny. So let's make that gzera. And the Gemara concludes, no, because he gufa gzera. This is why it's so important to know where is the gzera and where is the dindo raisa. So the dindo raisa is in rubo umakpid, rubo ve'eno makpid, or miut hamakpid is already a gzeira. If that's already a gzeira, we don't make a gzeira l'gzeira. That we don't do miut she'eno makpid because of all those things. So the minaga olam is to even remove things that are miut she'eno makpid, remove everything. The reason for that minig, by the way, is partly because sometimes we get into subjective shailas of what's called makpid and what's not called makpid. And the other reason is because there are some shitos that say that the way we establish rove is not by the whole body, but it's limb by limb. So in certain areas of the body, that could be very small. In other words, you know, this is an aver. This is an aver. There are 270 whatever, you know, avarim in the body. So it's not so much to reach rov over here. So therefore, you know, we're generally machmir. But b'di'evan, you always ask a shiloh because sometimes you're in a situation where it's not usur. Yeah.
What about the prevalent a nose ring or a nose post? What is that considered
for jewelry? Yeah, so jewelry generally women take out. There are situations where something is removable, so we generally assume it has to be removed. If, you know, sometimes you have a situation, so for example, stitches is a big discussion in Hilchas Tevila. So if there are dissolvable stitches, so the assumption is that's okay.
It's because part of the body.
That's part of the body. Yeah. If the stitches are going to come out, so then sometimes it depends. It depends on how soon they're going to come out. This also comes up with temporary fillings. Sometimes, for those who've been zeicha to have dental work, so you know that sometimes, you know, while all other areas of medicine have advanced tremendously, in dentistry, you go back multiple times, you know, and they go away for Pesach. So what happens is you go initially, they give you the temporary, then you're going to get the permanent filling. So could she go to mikvah with the permanent filling? For sure, it's going to be there forever. That's eino makpid, right? It's a miyut eino makpid. But could she go there with the temporary filling, knowing that it's going to come out? So many poskim are makel on the temporary filling for two different reasons. One reason is because since that's called the fact that there's a sort of like a date when it's going to come out means that right now at this moment in Leil Tefillah, it's there permanently. In other words, it's not like jewelry. You take it on, you take it off, you take it on, you take it off. This has a zman that it's going to come out.
It's something that I cannot take off myself.
That's also a shaila, maybe since you can't take it off yourself. And also some say that since it's going to be replaced with a permanent filling, that even if that exact filling is not permanent, the filling of that space is permanent. In other words, she's already been eino makpid, that's a space on her body that's going to always have something. So that becomes an issue. But different things. It depends on how permanent it will become attached to your body. Hair dye, right? You know, you color your hair. So pigment changes of the hair, that's not a foreign substance necessarily. Even if it's, you know, so it depends. But if it's something that's temporary, it's treated differently. Casts are a big challenge because casts are temporary. Casts come off. And you can't get it, and if they won't let you get it wet, so you know, there are many women that will have casts removed and put back on for Leil Tefillah. Sometimes the orthopedist will work with you. Sometimes it gets to be a challenge. Casts are a harder situation. You can't just like wrap it in plastic and hope for the best. Va'anan nekum v'nigzar gezera legezera. We don't go ahead and make a gezera legezera. Okay, so that's the story. Mechitzin ha-damron. What about mechitzin? So hinich l'Rabbi Yehuda makes sense. According to Rabbi Yehuda, who said in the last daf, you could learn it from the Aron. Elo l'Rameir ma'ikul l'meimar ki asoi ilchasa. What's the halacha l'Moshe Mi-Sinai related to mechitzos? So he says the halacha l'Moshe Mi-Sinai is legud v'lavud v'dofen akuma. There are some halachos of mechitzos that are extraordinary halachic constructs. One of them is good asik mechitzos, the notion that it, as long as a mechitza is 10 tefachim high, it could be viewed as if it goes all the way up. We have the same thing the other direction. If a mechitza is on top, it could be viewed good aches mechitzos, it could be viewed as if it's going down. Then we have lavud. Lavud means that even if the mechitzos are three tefachim apart from each other, you view them as if they're in a row. There's a big discussion. It's a big discussion. Fascinating. You ask what's the difference if it's halachah l'Moshe Mi-Sinai or din d'oraisa. So there's a big discussion whether or not you can combine these things that are halachah l'Moshe Mi-Sinai. So that's a big discussion in Reb Chaim. So can you combine lavud and dofen akuma in the same sukkah or in the same wall? Dofen akuma is where you have pasal schach over an area of the sukkah, and you view the wall as if it kind of bends to where the schach is kosher. You can't sit under that wall. You need to sit under the schach, but you don't lose that wall as attached to the larger sukkah, even though it really is detached because there is a gap of pasal schach between the wall and where the schach becomes kosher. And that comes up all the time with overhangs and these kinds of things and how much dofen akuma you can have. So this is a big discussion. The COVID sukkahs, right, when we were trying to make sukkahs with as much air flowing through, a lot of people took advantage of good asik mechitzos. They just made very short walls, sometimes even walls with lovewood, and then left the top of the sukkah open. And this way you had airflow back and forth. Completely mutter, not a problem at all. And so that's a big discussion. Those are all considered halachos lemoshe misinai. So in each one of these situations, there's a dimension that is a halacha lemoshe misinai. Okay, says the Gemara. Let's just get through the next part. V'she'ein lo shalosh tefanos, right? So back to the Mishnah. The Mishnah told us that a sukkah that doesn't have shalosh tefanos, that's a challenge, that's a problem. So Tanu Rabbanan, says the Rabbanan, all of us are familiar with this. Shtayim kehochasan v'shlishis afilu tefach. So one shita is you could have two lahalacha, that means there are two real walls, and the third is even a tefach. Rabbi Shimon Omer, shalosh kehochasan. You have to have three bona fide walls, v'revias afilu tefach. The fourth could be a tefach. The Michael Miflagi, what do they argue on? Rabbanan Savri, Yesh Aim Lamasores, Rabbi Shimon Savri, Savar, Yesh Aim Lamikra. So this is a famous machlokas we have a number of times in Shas, and it has to do with how to interpret the Chumash. We know that our Chumash, our Sefer Torah, comes without vowels, right? Comes without vowels. Mm-hmm. It only has consonants. We've become so habituated to how to read the language that when we look at certain consonants, we can discern what the vowel would be. Mm-hmm. But, like a hey at the end of the word. But that's not a vowel. Hey produces the sound. It's not a vowel. It's a consonant. So there are no vowels. So there's a mesora, right, which the Gaonim say go all the way back to Chazal. And there are those that preserve that mesora of how to vocalize and how to cantillate the psukim in the Torah. I think Torahs of Karaites have vowels, right? In order to preserve that. I don't know why I'm looking at Mitch for affirmation. I feel like you should be, not to say that you're a resident. At least you know. I visited Karaites. Oh, I visited Samaritans, not Karaites. Why are you doing a big thing on Samaritans now for some reason that is beyond my comprehension? And everyone should go look at it to see what the Samaritans do. So Yesh Eim LeMikra. So what's the difference? Do you read the Torah the way? Do you interpret the Torah the way it's written, or do you interpret the Torah the way it's vocalized? So here is how it works in our case. So Yesh Eim LeMikra means you're going to follow the way it is written in the Kra, and Yesh Eim LeMesores means you're going to follow the way it's shared. So says the Gemara. So Rabbanan Savri, the Rabbanan who held it's two and a bit, Yesh Eim Lamesores. They hold Yesh Eim Lamesores. So what does that mean? The Pasuk in the Chumash uses the word Sukkos three times. Twice without a Vav, Basukkos, Basukkos, and once with a Vav, Sukkos. So Sukkos. Hare Kan Arba. So you see represented here four sukkahs, right? The first two are singularly written without a vav, and the third is written sukkos, like it's multiple sukkahs with a vav. So we're going by the way it's written. So by the way it's written, yesh ein lemesores, the way it's passed down. So we have one sukkah, and then two sukkahs, and that gives us four. Dal chad legufei, we have to remove one, because it just has to acknowledge the subject of our discussion, which is sukkah. It's not open for interpretation. Pashulei t'losa, that leaves us with three mentions of sukkos. Shtayim kehilchasan, two of them have to be kehalacha. Va'asai hilchasa, and comes along the halacha l'mosh misinai and tells us, v'garasa l'shlishis, that the third could be garua, the third could be a little less, and could be only a tefach. And that's where they get the two and a tefach. The ukma a tefach, and therefore, and they establish it, is only a tefach. Rabbi Shimon Savar, Rabbi Shimon says, no, Yesh Eim LeMikra, right? We Yesh Eim LeMikra. We follow based on what's in the pasuk. So how do we read the pasuk? Kara. How do we read the pasuk? Basukos, basukos, basukos. It's read in the vocalization with a cholam, right? It may be a cholam chaser, but it's read sukos, right? So therefore, there's mention each one as two. What does that get us? Sheish, that as six. Dal chad kra legufe. We have to remove one of the sukos for the subject matter at hand. So that takes away two. Now we're only left with four. Pashulei arba. Now we're left with four. So of the four, shalosh kihilchasan. Three have to be bona fide clear walls. Asoi ilchasa comes along. The halacha l'moshe misinai. The garasa l'revius. And tells you, you could be less than four. V'ukimta atefach. And only have that fourth wall be a tefach. So that's the machlokes between the Rabbanon and Rabbi Shimon. Does it have to be three in a tefach or two in a tefach? It depends on your derivation from these psukim based on your stance on how we approach the psukim, the way they're written or the way they're vocalized and understood. Says the Gemara of Ibai Yisema, there's another possibility. No. Kuli alma yesh eim lemikra. Everybody holds yesh eim lemikra, which means basukos, 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 right? So if yesh eim lemikra, v'hacha be'haka miflegi. Mar sovar sochacha bayakra, umar sovar sochacha lo bayakra. Everybody agrees yesh eim lemikra. So where did we lose one? According to one shita, some say you also need an extra sukkah in order to acknowledge the schach. So if you need an extra sukkah to acknowledge a schach as an independent din, that only leaves you three. If you only have three, so then one goes to, but I'm sorry, that only leaves you three, so then you get two and a piece. But if you assume that schach is subsumed into the sukkah itself, it's part of the identity of the sukkah itself, so we only need to remove one sukkos. If we only need to remove one sukkos, that leaves us with four. Now that we're left with four, the halacha l'moshe misinai is we could do three in a tefach, but that leaves everyone based on how it's read and not based on how it's written.
So every the word,
Ibai Yisema, yeah.
Every word sukkos is represents one wall. Every time it says sukkos, we're talking three in a tefach. So each word represents a wall.
Not every word, every reference to sukkah. Sometimes in a word there could be two, right? That's what he's saying. So v'ibay yisema, and some say no, you can go the other way. Dekuliyama yesh eim lemisores. Everybody holds really yesh eim lemisores, and that means we go based on what we're looking at here. We go based on the misora. V'hacha b'hacha miflegi mar saver ki asaya el chasa ligra. Some one holds that the purpose of the halacha l'moshe misinai is to go ahead and remove one. So that brings us down a wall. Umar savar ki asai ilchasa lahosif. It comes to add one. So we were left with three. Some say the halacha l'moshe misinai tells, even though you were left with three, it could really be two and a bit. And some say, no, the halacha l'moshe misinai is, even though you were left with three, it has to be three and a bit. Right? So he goes lahosif. Everybody holds that it's really to go down. V'yesh eim lamesoris. And everybody holds yesh eim lamesoris. V'hacha b'darshin tchilos kamiflegi. Right? And here we're dealing with whether or not we're doresh tchilos. Rashi writes, l'drosha abeluhu arba. Whether or not we're doresh the beginning. We could be doresh the first one. Mar sabar darshin tchilos, could be darsh the first one. Umar sabar ein darshin tchilos. And this old question of whether or not you need this independent one at the beginning, that itself is the subject of the machlokas. Really, there's only four left, but do you need the last one in order to be darsh? Right. So Rav Masna Amar Tami. Okay. All right, we'll just add this statement. Ramas nomer tamid Rabbi Shimon me'acha. Here, Rabbi Shimon's reason is from here. Hesilga tiel etzel yomam mechorev lemechsel lemistar mizeram imimatar. So it has to be a certain degree of protection. So since it's from rain and from elements, and so therefore, you have to make sure that it minimally has three full walls, or because if it's more open than that, then things, you know, it doesn't really protect you. And that's his. That's the reason why he would say it needs three and a bit. The next part of the Gemara is exciting. Next part of the Gemara tries to figure out where this little bit needs to be put. Adjacent or opposite the original. Okay, very good.